Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air, and good afternoon, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael. Good afternoon.
Hi there. I have some announcements here to start.
Okay.
Could you use some awareness practice support from time to time throughout your day? Well, then there's good news. Practice Everywhere reminders are available again, now on the platform Blue Sky. Instructions on how to sign up are available on the Practice Everywhere page in the 2025 Practice Offerings at the Living Compassion website. And for these and other practice opportunities, please visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Ashwini, please press star 6 and then 1, and I would encourage folks to do that. And a conversation of about 5 minutes and on one topic is great. Okay, I think we're ready, Ashwini, unless you have something else to start us off with.
Nope.
All right, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes. Good afternoon, Michael. Good afternoon, Ashwini. This is Goli from Southern California.
Hey, Goli.
Hi, Ashwini. So I'm calling because there is somebody here who is still suffering because she feels that she needs to have someone else in her life. And, you know, it's something that I've worked on a lot. And, you know, obviously this practice has been a tremendous support. And I'm really very happy because I feel like I'm practicing more than I ever have. And I do have a relationship with the mentor. I am slowly but surely recording and listening. But somehow, there is still someone who feels like there's something missing. And some of it is that I feel, or she feels, like there's something missing and that someone needs to take care of her. But it's also now being turned around that, you know, it's kind of selfish to be on your own and you should have someone else who you're taking care of, because just like there have been, you know, other people who have supported you. So anyway, it's just such a huge area of suffering. And the reality is relationships have never been helpful in my life. And anyway, I just thought I would call in and get some support on that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So if I may, two things you said, Goli, that perhaps we could look at and unpack, right? So the first thing that when you have had people who you have been in relationship with, it hasn't actually fulfilled for you what feels you're missing right now.
Right. I mean, there are some good things, but it's just like tremendously difficult and it takes a lot of energy and
effort,
creates a lot of tension. And it's just not like in the movies.
That's right. It's not like in the movies. So what is it that you feel you're missing?
I don't know. There's still an emptiness there. You know, there's just a silence in my life. And, you know, it's probably a good thing, but it's always interpreted as, you know, something missing, something wrong. Your life doesn't look like other people's lives. It's never looked like other people's lives. And this is just another, like, way to demonstrate that you just are not normal. You've never been normal. Your life has never been normal. You never quite managed to get it together.
And Goli, given how much practice you're doing and the assignment that we just did, right? Mm-hmm. Can you see that entire it's all a conversation?
Yes,
but it's not real, right? I mean, you've had a very rich and fulfilling life, I project. You've done things, you've worked hard, you've gone on vacation, you have relationships. If you weren't listening to that and believing the truth of it, would there actually be a problem with your life?
I actually think if there was no conversation and I was just allowed to live this life, you know, however big or small or interesting or uninteresting, just the life that I was given, that I've tried to do the best with. I think it's an okay life, and it's actually a life that is, in a lot of ways, you know, especially with where I am in my life in terms of age and stage of life, is actually quite perfectly suited to spiritual practice. There's not a lot of, especially if there isn't another person, there's not a lot of noise and there's not a lot of distraction. The most compelling story now, Ashwini, is that I need to find someone else to take care of. You know, so I find these people that I feel sorry for, and then I feel bad to just let them go because, you know, I'm told I should be taking care of someone else. But you're right. To answer your question, no. I think if I don't listen to the conversation,
you might even
would be a lot better.
If you hadn't listened to the conversation, if you hadn't been conditioned to listen to the conversation, you might actually be able to be more enthusiastic about the life you do have. Right? We can watch how our conditioning not to receive everything that we've been given trivializes what we've been given.
Right. Can you say that again?
Oh, just simply that, you know, there's so much magnificence in the moment. We were talking about it this morning on the radio show, right? Every flower is a miracle. The sun on your face is a miracle. The fact that you have hands that work so miraculously is a miracle. The fact that energy gets converted into the things that you can, that power your life, is a miracle. I mean, if we just stop and consider for a single moment everything that is, within quotes, around us that we interact with, it's stupendous. It's wonderful. It's incredible. But we live in the idea that there is the Disney movie is the ultimate that we have to achieve in our lives, rather than we're living the Disney movie, we're just not aware of it, right?
Yeah.
And so, if I may, right, Goli, I mean, having had many conversations with you in the past, I would say that the desire of your heart is a relationship or intimacy with divinity, right? It's what you are in search of. And so when you say that there is a vast emptiness, now is the opportunity to make friendship with it. What is emptiness? What is the silence? When all of the distractions, as you say, the striving and the belief that the other person is going to complete you and, you know, you have to achieve X and Y, at this stage of your life, when you are arriving at that place of the space to dedicate your entire self to the pursuit of what you've always desired, which is not another person, but intimacy with divinity itself, then we could start with gratitude for that opportunity and curiosity about how to develop friendship with emptiness. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness, because that's where divinity is.
Right.
And so here's another place to look. So when, you know, Sherry often will say that the aspect of ourselves that is not willing to be embraced in unconditional love and acceptance isn't real. It's ego. Right? Mm. It's the veil that is standing between us and love.
Mm.
So if you weren't listening to somebody who is truly feeling, because if we record and listen, if we develop the relationship with the mentor, if we're practicing that movement of embracing every aspect of ourselves in unconditional love, then whoever she is does feel like she has someone. She has you.
Mm.
Okay? She doesn't feel bereft because there is some internal friend that is going to always be available, whom every aspect, every authentic aspect of ourselves is able to relate to. So when we continue to experience that sense of loneliness, then we attempt whatever practice, tool, or structure that's available to us to embrace that. And if that continues to hold out, we can start losing interest in solving, within quotes, that problem. And turn instead to the friendship that we are actually seeking.
Right. Right.
Yes. And tremendous compassion, because it is a hard place. It's a very real place, right? That I'm alone, I'm lonely, I don't have someone for me. It can cause this internal crumbling, this collapse inside, because it's a frightened young emotional place.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thank you so much for that, Srini. Yeah, I think it's because this got triggered in my life, like you said, at a very, very unusually young age. And so I think that's why it's quite, it's such a strong pattern in me.
That's right. And that's such a beautifully compassionate way of saying it. It's a very strong pattern in me, because then it makes it appropriately, it labels it for what it is. It's a pattern. Gets
right.
fed by attention, it gets
right.
dissolved by love.
Right.
We're just trained to believe that it's somebody else's love that's going to dissolve it. But as you said, you know, when we try to get that need met in places where in other people, it doesn't get fed.
Right.
And so we have to take responsibility for the reality of the only place where that need gets met is by the unconditional love that you are.
Mm-hmm.
And in that establishing that relationship, you find your heart's desire, right? Which is not just that love is your experience of yourself, but you have a connection to the love that is all that is.
All right. Yeah. So, thank you.
So,
I will listen to.
Yes. Well, there's an active practice here, right, Goli? I mean, one of my favorite poems is the one about Hafiz and, you know, the two fat people in a boat, or how the friend and I go to the marketplace and we buy what we need in order to cook in our kitchen. So it might seem, I don't know, fake or somewhat awkward to create that. But to be in that relationship with yourself as you go about your day. So Sherry's talked a couple of times over the last 2 weeks about talking to everything around her, because everything is alive. So I mean, I do that often, right? So I'm washing the dishes, and how would you like to have the table set? And just really make it real that you actually have a friend, because you do. The thing that we are told is emptiness is actually alive, right? Ego is the friend we don't want to have, the companion we don't want to have, the relationship we'd rather not be in. But that's what we reinforce as real and then feel bereft and alone. And so an active practice of going to the going with a friend to the grocery store, talking to the friend on your way back from work, writing love letters to the friend, having the friend write love letters to you at night. I mean, that was one of the most transformative practices in my life, which was a year of writing love letters to the friend, or the friend writing love letters to me and then reading it in the morning. But you replace the experience of feeling bereft with the experience of friendliness.
Ashwini, you know, the last time I talked to you, you gave me the practice, which I've been doing, of making a short recording at night and then listening to it in the morning and short recording in the morning. This time I'm going to start from tonight with the love letters every night.
Yes, right. Have your beloved write a letter to you. I mean, it works differently, you know, just because you can write a letter to the beloved and talk about how much you appreciated their presence in your life and the various acts of friendliness that you observed them doing for you throughout the day. That's one way of writing it. And maybe that's the Monday, you know, you alternate between you expressing how you see your friend acting in your life, and then your friend writes to you about all the wonderful ways in which she appreciates you or thinks you're wonderful. It could go both ways, and you'd be amazed at what shows up.
All right. I'm going to start that from tonight.
All right. Keep us posted. Let me know.
I will. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the support. Thank you. I appreciate it. Deep Gyasho. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Goli. Ashwini, it sounds like a practice that each of us could take on. And I love that. And we have another
call. Really, what you practice is what you have.
Yes. What you practice is what you have, indeed. And here's our next caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Stefania. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, hey, Stefania.
Hi. So I love the previous call. Today I feel weird, but not just today, about, you know, I was thinking, listening to the other call, you know, I have a family, I have a relationship, but the feeling of not doing enough or being enough is a constant thing in my life. And being worried about what's going on, or being worried because if I'm happy, there's something wrong because so many people are suffering. And so I don't know where to start. Let me think. Yeah, I don't know where to start. Because, like, there's always this second thought that comes, like, the second thought or of changing whatever good feeling comes in, like, is enough where you are, what you have, what's going on in the world right now. It's okay. And then the voice said, no, it's not okay until everyone are going to be happy. And so it's a very sad and anxious status.
That's right. It is, isn't it? It's miserable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Stefania, here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply bow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, desires. Because I project, again, we've talked about this a couple of times, and you've brought the same pattern to practice a lot, right?
Yes.
And what that says is, first of all, thank God we don't have to bring us a pattern that's alien. We at least can recognize it as a pattern that follows us around.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Got it. Oh my God, this Saturn again? All right, I just need to let it go. And then it comes back again, I let it go. It comes back again, I let it go. And I let it go in a way that is, as we were practicing this week, is it's very real. In the sense of I take a breath, I feel the breath, I feel the feet beneath my feet, I talk about a good feeling I'm having, and as you said, reassure the person that she's doing the best that she can, turn my attention to the ebullience of the cherry blossom trees, and get here. And the only takeaway, at least for me, right, is that in those times when the energy feels oppressive or the voices are really escalating a situation or a circumstance, amplifying it, you could say, it just means we double down on letting it go. So oftentimes, you just say the 68th bead constantly, because even a small gap causes that second thought to be in awareness.
I'm sorry, can you repeat this last thing? I missed the action that you were just describing.
I was reciting the 68th bead right here from the commission, right? So whatever it is, that mantra has to be the thing that the attention is on over and over and over again, because you're in a situation or circumstance where the voice is escalating. It has lots of energy. It really wants your attention. And so you're walking along and you see the beautiful tulip, and then the voice says, you know what, Stefania, you can't be standing here looking at the tulip because
there's something more important to do. Yes.
In South Africa, something is happening. Okay, here in humble submission, in order to appreciate this most perfect now, I'm here with the beautiful tulip. Oh, Stefania, what about that patient you never, blah, 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 blah.
Yes, yes.
Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now. Oh my God, it's a cherry blossom. Yeah? Right? Because when the attention, when it's fighting so hard for your attention, your energy of redirecting the attention has to be greater.
Yes. I feel like a duel. What you were describing, I saw the two swords, the tang, 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 tang. The thought coming, the response to the other sword coming against it.
That's right.
Yes.
It is a battle for your attention, and
you need
to embrace the fact that it's fun to be in that battle, and eventually you'll wear it out.
That's a hope, I guess, that I need to add, because the other thought is that's never going to happen. So I need to continue to go again to that thought and say,
never going to happen, Stefania, here in humble submission, in order to experience the most perfect. Because any thought is simply meant, so as soon as the thought becomes believable, we're not fighting it. I mean, we're not in the, it's basically won the round, right? And so it has to become more and more believable for you, and you'll be drawn more and more into its orbit. Right?
Yeah.
And then when the energy of that particular thought pattern has dissipated, there will be space for something to drop in for you to do, if you have to do it. And or you create a structure where you are practicing, it's a workshop, you're practicing something that allows you to trust yourself over the voices. So, for example, if it's telling you you're not doing enough, you can say, okay, if I make an agreement with myself that these are the six things that I'm going to do, if I do these six things, I'm not going to entertain a conversation about you haven't done enough. So we're agreed beforehand. Enough equals these six things today.
Mm-hmm.
If I do those six things, I'm not having the conversation about enough. And it can be very detailed, one for your relationship, one for your patient, one for your family, one for the world, one for the whatever, six things, right? Not having the conversation anymore.
Okay.
One for the planet, one for Stefania, right? Okay, six things. Got it.
Yeah,
thing that we arrive at as a consequence of that is what it's the previous caller, right? Ultimately, Sivanya, the thing that we're doing in spiritual practice is to recognize that we're not in charge, right? In other words, there is the intelligence that animates is bigger, more mysterious, more complex, more, I don't know, infinite than we could ever imagine it to be. So whatever is playing out in this universe is playing out perfectly because there's no other alternative to that. That's what I'm surrendering to. My humble submission is my thoughts, desire, tension, pressure, which is defining my sense of how this world should be, is what I am surrendering to so that I can inhabit the bliss of the infinitude in which enough doesn't even arise.
Yes. Yes, definitely. That is the biggest thing. The fact that my view of how the world should go, should be, doesn't match how it's going. And so,
and that's the gap, right? The anxiety is, I think it's Joko Beck who says it, right? The gap between how the world is and how we think it should be is anxiety.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. And so when you are with the tulip, mm-hmm. there is no gap. If you're completely with the tulip, there is no gap.
Mm-hmm.
If you're completely with the person, yes, if you're completely with the person who's having, who's feeling alone, and you're having a conversation with that person, you're with that person. There is no gap.
Yes, it feels so selfish. That's a problem, but that's a thought. Like, if I don't get to the thought or the conclusion of the thought, then there's no judgment of what. What is. Yes.
It's just so interesting. If I have to take care of other people, and that makes me unselfish.
Yes.
Right? Which is so not true. But we're so conditioned to believe it's true. First of all, it's not true. And the second of all, it's about you, right? It's about me. In order for me to be all right, I have to take care of somebody else, whether they want me to take care of them or not, whether they like it when I take care of them or not, whether they appreciate it or not. That's all. It's all irrelevant, right? It's the most important thing is I need not to be selfish.
Mm-hmm. And then I lose myself.
Well, it's just a focus of attention, right? It becomes all about what you need to be doing.
Yeah.
Because I project in your job, for example, you are selfless in terms of the true meaning of that, which is you're in service to something beyond the ego. Right? Yeah. Whenever we're not in that conversation, not believing any voice that says you're being selfish or you should be doing enough or you're not enough or any of those things, we're not in service to the smallest self. As long as we're in service to the smallest self, we're selfish, right? Because the focus of attention is egocentric. So it behooves us to redefine what selfish is.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I will listen to this again.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And stick with the tulips.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing exactly the practice of redirecting the attention. I project you're being told it's not working, but it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No. And I just need to continue instead of saying it's not working, so don't do it because that's how it doesn't work. Yes.
Triple, quadruple, Googleplex the effort and the energy of getting to presence.
Yes. 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 The present now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Stefania.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for joining us, Stefania. And Ashwini, we are going to go to Good News Update, and then we'll come back and talk to more callers.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Jen, your guest is now live, and I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thanks, Michael. And I'm pleased to be joined by Jeff this afternoon. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Jen.
So tell us a little bit about your topic.
Well, yeah, it's so fun. It's fun because this is, you know, it's an example. This is an example of the topic, really. So I just signed up to, you know, I'm one of the people who signs up periodically to be interviewed on Good News.
Mm-hmm.
And recently there was some slots that were opened, and I signed up having no idea what the topic would be, but I just signed up.
Yeah.
And then at some point, you know, just this little notion, just little wisp of a notion, you know, started to come in that the topic would be the more you participate, the more you transform.
Hmm. You know, I just got this image just right with that, Jeff, of the thing Sherry talks about of breadcrumbs, right? So, you know, first of all, you're talking about putting yourself in the queue, in the biggest sense, right? Okay, yeah. Right? Invitation to be on Good News? Sure. Yep. We'll see. Life will reveal. And then sure enough, there's that first breadcrumb.
Yes. And, you know, and what I want to say about it, too, is that it really hasn't been until the last 2 or 3 days that more has come in.
Mm.
And so there's been that little ego story trying to come in to say, among other things, that this is irresponsible.
Mm.
That it's getting this close and you are running the risk. It didn't say this in words, but I know this is the message. You're running the risk of letting the sangha down and not having a good topic to talk about when it's time to talk.
So you better turn to conditioned mind, Jeff. Now is the time to turn to conditioned, because the stakes are getting high and you don't want to let sangha down, so you better turn to conditioned mind now.
Right. Either look like a fool or let sangha down, or both. And yeah. And fortunately, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think exactly what you're saying. You didn't do that. You didn't look to conditioned mind.
Right, right. There's just that little bit of believing it, you know, the little bit of wondering, but mostly I just let that go by. And because there's enough, and not just experience, and this is actually part, again, it gets back to the topic, that there's, you know, there's enough participation where I've heard over and over again, the guide talks about, we talk about sometimes we are saying the same things over and over again, although it's not over and over again, it's new, it's always new, it's said in different words, it strikes me slightly differently, I'm in a different place when it comes, but I've heard, you know, that we're not planning and preparing, we're being in the moment. We're allowing life, allowing life to determine the topic. I'm not determining the topic.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so, that's it, Jeff, right? In fact, I'm not doing anything. That seems like another huge theme of practice in the last 6 months to a year, right? And so you're describing it perfectly, because part of what's so fun about it is we're just here, we're present. Mm-hmm. We're participating, and then all those things are available when it's time for them to, when they're relevant. So in this case, Good News topic, all the times of hearing Sangha and the guide and facilitators talk about, you know, we don't need to do anything, that drops in for you because that's relevant to this moment and you're here for it to hear that.
That's so big. I love that. That's so good. And you know, another thing that occurs to me about it is this is where the fun is.
Completely.
This is where the fun is. The fun is in not knowing and not being a me.
Yeah.
And who knows what's going to happen, and being a witness and a participant in that process as it unfolds, never knowing what the next step will be. That's where the fun and excitement is.
Well, and what, let's see if I can say what I saw when you said that. That's ending suffering right there.
Mm.
Because what you're describing from a condition point of view is why we're completely stressed out as human beings. Right?
Mm.
Because
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen? Oh my God, I have no idea. And I get talked into having to prepare for that. And what am I going to say? And what are people going to think? And how is this going to go? And how is that going to go? And we suffer, right? We suffer. And instead, when we realize we are life and it's unfolding perfectly in every moment, it's fun.
Yes. You know, what I've seen in that and what I just saw again as you said it is that when I'm a me, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying, I think I need to protect myself and
yep.
what might happen to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I'm the, you know, how do we talk about it? The nobody, if I'm in the in quotes, the observer, the participant who's not controlling it, but simply, you know, allowing or being moved or whatever, then I have this intuitive sense that it's all right. And nothing, you know, what bad could happen?
There, you know what
bad can happen to presence?
Exactly.
You know,
there's no target there. You're describing perfectly that fabulous Wei Wu Wei quote, right? 99.9% of everything we think and everything we do is for the self, and there isn't one. It's no wonder we suffer.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And that's what you're describing. When there's a me, and I think I'm that me, there's no way around suffering. That is suffering. But when there's life unfolding, as you're describing, there isn't.
Yeah, and just to hear that, I don't know what that percentage was, but the 99 point whatever, you know, it's like, oh, wow, yeah, that's where I spend so much of my time. Whoa,
yeah.
That's just good to notice.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, could we, I would like to talk about a little bit about what I have been seeing also in the last few days about the idea that the more we participate, the more we transform.
Yeah, we have a couple of more minutes for sure, Jeff.
Okay. So I want to, you know, a lot of what I've been seeing is, and I think, this is where the topic, it occurred to me last night, and as I was emailing back to you about this, that I think this may be where it occurred first, the topic first occurred, is in simply being, simply participating in the moment in a practice container, not doing anything, but showing up, being present. And what I am aware of is that things that are said in practice conversations change me.
Yes.
In a moment, I am changed by hearing something that I've never heard before, or maybe I've heard it thousands of times before, but it strikes me in a new way, and I am different.
Yes.
In that instant.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And then, you know, just magnify that or multiply that by showing up,
mm-hmm.
showing up. For all the different things, right? The the calls where I can call in live and be in the queue,
mm-hmm.
the calls where that I'm listening to, and I listen to all of them, whether I was in the queue or not later, and, you know, in the recordings, and, you know, reflective listening buddies, keeping commitment buddies, et cetera, et cetera. And the recording and listening I do on my own, all of that, it just feels like it builds on itself.
Yes.
There's this momentum that gets going that is just like, you know, it's again, this is where the fun is. It just becomes more and more fun, more and more exciting. And I'm seeing more and more and it just builds.
Yeah. I mean, you're really describing what you practice is what you have. That's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if so, of course, as you're spending more and more time practicing, that's what you have. You have presence. That's what is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for being with us this afternoon to talk about it. It was very, very fun.
Thank you so much, Jen.
All right. Go happy.
Go happy.
And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Jeff. And welcome back to Open Air, Ashwini, and that conversation was fabulous.
Oh, it was tremendous.
Yes, and we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Vanessa in North Carolina.
Hey, Vanessa.
Hey, Ashwini. Let's see. So I was doing, or I am doing, Q practice, and let's see. I always have so many amazing questions while I'm sitting in the morning, and then when it comes to the after, you know, the evening call, they're just gone. I guess what I'm looking at, or one of the things that I'm looking at right now, is I am sort of taken a step back from my job and have a lot more sort of free time, and it's interesting because I feel like I've always been really driven by my job, and anyways, where I'm a farmer and have been a farmer for 30 plus years, and as the season gets going, it's just like putting out fires, and now with this step back, I don't have that pushing me, and it's sort of uncomfortable and wonderful at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Would you say, Vanessa, that the identity that was a majority part of your life is no longer there, right? So it's like it's like a space. Right, and that there's the discomfort and the relaxation, partly perhaps because you're not being pushed, and so there's an expansiveness. There's no driving focus, and so there's a sense of relaxation, and then the discomfort being, okay, well, this feels odd, this feels different.
Right, right, yeah, and that spaciousness. So, you know, some days. Or moments, it does feel spacious, and I'm like, oh, you know, what now? I can just do that thing that shows up. And then other days, you know, talking about that identity, was I feel like I really used to use the identity as a farmer, as a like a counter to the voices of self-hate. So like, you know, I may be this, that, and the next thing, but I do this good thing and I'm out there farming and this is a good thing. So yes. I'm okay.
Yes. So would it be fair to say, Vanessa, right, we're very used to doing, and oftentimes when we're doing, the attention, the awareness collapses to the task. And so it's a counter to the voices. In other words, there's nothing left over for the attention to attend to, right? It's completely in the task. And so when I'm identified with that, there isn't a question of listening to something if I'm shoveling dirt, let's say, right? And so then what? So it's sort of like a through line with the, our last two callers, right? Because the what the absence of an identity or doing leaves us with is the opportunity to be receptive to being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not that mm-hmm. we don't oscillate between those states when we're farming, but that place of when there's a lot of spaciousness, it's almost like I have to recalibrate my receptors to be able to receive life at a very nuanced level, at a very deep level, and much more sensitively almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And of course, that void can easily be filled by the voices if we're not paying attention, because it is void.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. That is sort of like the, particularly the first caller. There's this sort of void. Nothing has to be done anymore. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So then what do I do is what the question,
exactly.
The question, right? I'm going to get bored. I'm going to be, ha-ha. And so it isn't that there isn't activity, right, that you can participate in. Absolutely you can. It's just that there's a lot more space. There's just a lot more space. And so
mm-hmm.
now there's the opportunity to make friends with emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different. Mm-hmm. It's a different So the way I think it's Alan Watts talks about it, right? Life is an on and off pulse. We're very, very attuned to the on pulse because there's something tangible that the attention can be directed towards, right? But the off pulse.
Mm-hmm.
How do you tune into an off pulse?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not that we can't. It's not that we don't. It's just that we're not habituated.
Right. Well, it's interesting that you say that, too, because another thing that I've sort of looking at is it does feel a little bit like I'm waiting. I don't think that I'm waiting. Like, there's not a conscious, like, okay, what's the next thing going to be? It's actually more like, it just seems like something is coming, but maybe not. I don't know.
well, that will be interesting to watch because what for me that place is receptivity, because receptivity
mm-hmm.
is listening. It feels like a waiting, right? Because there's an openness to something being revealed to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not to fall for... I'm open because something is coming, but that is the entire experience of receptivity.
Say that again, or say.
Oh, just simply that we can say, oh, this feels like I'm waiting, and
uh-huh.
immediately we're conditioned to say I'm waiting for something. Rather than if there is being in the spaciousness with that open. That openness, which there's a beautiful word for, right? Shunyata, emptiness, is that's what it's the feeling of intimacy with life is that feeling of waiting, listening, receiving, open, as it talks to me and reveals itself to me in ways that I was not receptive to before.
Mm-hmm. Mhm. Right. Yeah, and it feels a little bit like there's lots of things kind of coming together for me that is allowing that receptivity.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that things are falling away and therefore there's this experience of it's coming together. In order for me to open to that depth.
Right.
Which can only be encountered in that yin place. not a lack of attention. It's not that we're not alert. We're superbly alert. Completely here.
That's so interesting, because one of the things I think that I hear is like, are you asleep? Like, are you just not paying attention? Like, what? You know?
Yes.
But I think you're right. Or maybe there's oscillation between just, being asleep or floating and then actually being receptive.
That's right. And that's what you're attending to right now, right? Because now,
right.
So, I mean, Sherry says this all the time. If you're hearing a voice that says, are you asleep or are you awake? Then you have to be there in order to hear it that clearly.
Right.
Right? So we don't need to indulge it. There's that movement into humble submission, letting that thought go, redirecting the attention to recapturing that receptivity, right? And then the vocabulary of grace becomes something that you learn. Because it tells you, right? Suddenly that there's a gentleness and a feeling of relaxation and a well-being, and you notice the birdsong more and the colors are brighter, and you know there's a sense of joy that is accessible to you inside of you. Your meditation is deeper. You're prone to going for more walks. You're prone to stopping and smelling the roses more because you're being attuned to a level of recognition of grace that, you know, if you had something to do, legitimately to do, like get the farm ready for the season, maybe that grace shows itself in the vigor of your arms. So you can shovel the dirt, but it's not available to you to stop and smell the tulips in that moment, because that's the grace is not revealing itself to you that way, right?
Right, right, yeah. Well, lots to look at.
It's fascinating. Then you know the. Mm-hmm. That if we're open to it, the dance is a different dance.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. Asho, thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Vanessa. And Ashwini, I think we have time for at least one more call here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Ramita in South Carolina.
Hey, Ramita.
Hello, Ashwini. I have a question. I'd like to talk some about the privileged environment, and I know, you know, that the privileged environment is something that sets our practices apart from, makes it more special, it's unique, it's precious. And I want to care for it. I want to participate in a way that supports the privileged environment, I guess the specific question I've got is, with the year-long retreat, I've participated in that for quite a while, and recently my husband has expressed interest in listening, and he has not signed up for the retreat, and I've been, instead of sitting with my earbuds or going elsewhere, I have been letting him listen to the half-hour radio show. And I found that when I started doing this, I was not then putting myself in the queue. And then I realized, there's a sense of I don't want to speak within a practice setting that includes someone who's perhaps not practicing. And then it led back to say, well, you know, I don't want to talk that way. This sounds like it's a privileged environment, perhaps a violation and something I need to bring to guidance.
Uh-huh. So if I'm tracking what you're saying, Ramita, is there an exploration of what the privileged environment is, right? Because to me, the interesting part about the privileged environment is everybody is in relationship to practice,
mm-hmm.
not to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that feel like the place where you're tripping up? Because one of the ways you could write into the guest master for guidance about is how you might work with the request of your husband to actually participate. That would allow you not to be in conditioned mind and come from there in terms of being inclusive of him, right? So
yeah.
The guidance in if somebody asks you about practice, the guidance is to give them there's a nothing wrong with you book or a practice book to say, have your own experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to tell them about your experience of it or share your experience of it, which on a principle level is pretty much the same. Where the guidance could be, if you want to participate in listening to the radio show, why don't you write to information@livingcompassion and see if you can set yourself up to participate? Because then it's clean. That's within the privileged environment. That's you protecting your privileged environment and your husband.
Yes, and it did occur to me to... You know, I told them it's possible. I know that people can join in if you write to the guest master. But I communicated that, and then I've continued to share that. So, when I suggested that he do that, or that I started to explain that there is something about the privileged environment, and he says, well, what are you afraid of? And I said, it's not fear. There's a respect for the sanctity of the space, the privacy, the environment of support for looking deeply. And then I just, that's as far as I wanted to go. I wanted to, you know, and then the conditioned mind comes in with, you know, are you being avaricious with bestowing of the teaching? Are you going too far to let him have his own experience? So, yeah, I am struggling a bit with, you know, where to go. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think reaching back into practice and to get guidance, especially from Sherry, I mean, like direct guidance about how to work with it would be helpful. And here's the other the place of compassion for Ramita in this, right? So there was a way in which it unfolded. And now there's a sense of being able to examine your own process and go, what does it mean to have to practice in the privileged environment and the sense of not wanting to speak? And so there is, it's the thing about the mulligan in Don't Suffer, Communicate, right? So you can always say, you know what, if we've tried this, now I'm owning the experience of I am uncomfortable with this. I'd like to get guidance. And so I'm going to go listen to the radio show on my own. If you want to listen to it, write into the guest master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a way to support myself in getting the guidance that I need and allowing my partner to make a decision on his own about how he proceeds from this.
Precisely, because I mean, here again, you can record and listen to so there's several levels of it, right? You can examine your own process, you can explore what the privileged environment for you is, what you value about it, how important it is, because the primary aspect of the privileged environment is that ego is not allowed in into that environment, right? And so everybody can be protected. So in order for that protection to be afforded to you, for you to feel safe, you need to step back into the privileged environment, right? Because what's going on isn't within the privileged environment.
Right.
And since the person you have invited in doesn't understand the privileged environment, then you're the one who can keep it.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes, thinking of it as I have invited someone into the privileged environment that doesn't understand the structure of that has brought me into a unsafe place, which definitely is not the privileged environment, and it's what the privileged environment is designed to protect. And and I realized this would be a really good place to do some interviewing.
Absolutely. And write in for guidance.
I will certainly do that. Thank you so much, Ashwini.
Thanks, Ramita.
Thanks for joining us, Ramita. And Ashwini, we have reached the top of the hour, and it's been a fabulous show.
It has indeed. Thank you, Michael. Thank you to everyone who's been in the queue, who participated, who's been listening. Go happy.
Yes, go happy.